Good morning. Today's daf and Baba Basra is Kuf Chavav. Continuing our discussion regarding the Pishnaim that goes to the Bechor, the Torah says that the Bechor gets a double portion, but only Kol Asher Yematzelo, only those things which are currently on hand. So any assets that are not currently on hand but are collectible does not go to the Bechor. In that we saw Machlokus between the Chachamim and Rebbe, where we are trying to give definitions of what is considered roi versus what's considered mukhzak. The Chachamim have a very tight, rigid definition in terms of what is considered mukhzak. Mukhzak means current holdings, and that is pretty much literally it. Anything which is currently held by the estate at the time of death, that goes, that's something the Bechor has pishnayim, but any collectible, we're talking about a loan, we're talking about an appreciation, we're talking about a rental, anything that's incoming but has not yet been collected. So that is going to fall under the category of Rawi, and the Bechor does not receive Pishnayim of that. Masha'in Kain, according to Rebbe, Rebbe has a slightly looser interpretation of what is considered Mochzak. Rebbe's of the opinion that if it's incoming, and the Bechor is going to, and the estate is going to receive it, it's going to be automatic, and they don't have to put any kind of expenditure in it. So that's considered mochzak, that's considered a current holding of the estate. So, and we've been discussing the machlokis between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Yesterday, a machlokas we saw amongst the Amoraim, this machlokas we saw on the bottom of Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Beis, between Rabban and Rav Nachman, maybe it makes a difference. We're talking about account receivable, we're talking about getting paid a loan. The estate had an outstanding receivable, and it got paid. So the Gemara had a machlokas Amoraim yesterday. Maybe it should make a difference whether or not they get paid back in money or they get paid back in property. And as we pointed out yesterday, we can make arguments in either direction, that perhaps getting paid back in money is another. In other words, money went out, money came back in again, so therefore, I understood it's not the same money, but still, it's the same amount of money. So maybe you can make an argument over there that that is considered a current holding, since we got paid back in the same thing that went out. On the other hand, you can make the argument that, no, maybe when you get paid back in property, well, property, we know we had a lien on from the very beginning. There was a shibud on that property. So maybe you get paid back in property. That could also be viewed as a current holding. So this is the opinions of Rab and Rav Nachman, not to go into too much detail in terms of who held what, but those are the opinions of the Amoraim. The Gemara acknowledged that they themselves don't actually believe this, meaning what they were espousing was a viewpoint within the position of Rebbe, but within the position of the Chachamim, which the Gemara said yesterday, that's the position they themselves do subscribe to. So then the truth of the matter is that no milveh, no loan, no outstanding or receivable is going to be considered a current holding, and therefore they're of the personal opinion that the Bechor is not going to get pishnayim in that. And we continue from where we left off yesterday. We talked about the case of the grandmother. Just a quick recap of this case of the grandmother. An interesting case, somewhat complicated case, where a guy dies and he has an estate and he knows he has children. He has a daughter, in fact. But right now, he currently wants to leave the estate over by his grandmother. And then he dictates in the Shchimera, in his instruction, the last instructions, that it's going to go to my grandmother. And then in the when she dies, so then it's going to go to my yorshim, meaning they're not going to go to her yorshim. She has her own set of yorshim, so but they're not going to go to her yorshim. They're going to go to my yorshim. So basically, his instruction was: my estate is going to spend some time by my grandmother until the end of her life, and then it's going to go to my children. What happened was is that he was survived by his grandmother and by a daughter. And then what happened subsequently is that his daughter got married. Then what happens is that there were two deaths. Unfortunate is that the man's daughter dies, and then the grandmother dies. And so now what his surviving son-in-law is now claiming is that I should get the Yerusha. Why? Because remember, what was the instructions of my father-in-law? Instructions were that first it should go to the grandmother and then it should go to his yorshim. His yorshim was his daughter. His daughter was my wife. So what he's arguing is that first it should go to the daughter through the halach of Yerusha, and then it should come to me through the halach of Yerusha once again. Because that we know a husband is inheriting his wife's property. That was his argument. So is this a valid argument? So the Gemara had a machlokas on this point, and Rav Huna said it's a valid argument. Rav Hanan says it's not a valid argument. The Gemara said yesterday, we did did this already, just chazaring. The Gemara said yesterday that we do follow the conclusion of Rav Hanan, but not for the reason of Rav Hanan. Let's pick it up. Let's pick it up right here at that point in time of the Gemara. I know we read this yesterday, but we'll pick it up. It's like towards the top of the Amud on Kuf Chaf Hamad Beis, about 6-7 lines from the top of the Amud. It's the first word in the line. Shalchem Itam. I'm going back actually two words before that. They sent the following correspondence from Eretz Yisrael, and that is Hilchos Hakavasa deRav Hanan. The halacha follows like Rav Hanan, meaning in this very unusual case, the husband is not going to be inheriting his wife's estate, meaning this portion of his wife's estate. Why? V'lav mitame, not for the reason Rav Hanan said. Rav Hanan said that we follow the instructions of the original owner, meaning her father. We follow his instructions, and his instructions were only the Yorshim, only those who directly inherit him. Gemara says, no, that's not it. But Hilchsa Kavasa de Ravanan Ba Lo Yaris Velav Mitame de Ilu Ravanan Savra Afagav de Havale Bra La Barte Lo Yaris. Because if you ask Rav Hanan, can anyone else get the property? Rav Hanan will say no. Because again, we're hanging on his every word. His words were, after my grandmother finishes with the estate, I mean after she dies, then it's going to go to my Yorshim, meaning and only to my Yorshim. That's what Rav Hanan would say. And let's say his daughter had a son, it wouldn't go to him, because he said only to my Yorshim. But the Gemara says, but that's not correct. Velohi. De'ilu havale bra labarte vanayaris. Meaning, if his daughter had a son, of course his son would inherit. Meaning the son is a direct progeny of the daughter. Of course the son would have inherited. Uval hainu taima de lo yaris mishim de havale roi. As far as the reason why the husband is not inheriting this estate, is because, from the husband's perspective, this is a receivable. It is a collectible, but has not yet been collected. Because we know the halacha is, we're going to conclude like this again today. We did this already before in the perek, and that when a husband inherits, he only inherits current holdings. The husband does not inherit any collectible, any future collection. And so over here, this is a perfect illustration of a future collection. When his wife died, so the grandmother was still alive. Her, I should say more accurately, her great-grandmother is still alive. And it's true that if we reverse the order of deaths, if first the great-grandmother died, she would have inherited it. And then if she would have died, so then that would have gone to her husband. But that wasn't the order. The order was first she died, then the great-grandmother died. So this is something which is a future. And we know the halach is that when a husband inherits his wife, he only inherits current holdings, not things stand to be collected. Mechlal, sorry, period. Okay, so that's the Gemara says, that's the conclusion, and that's why in this scenario, the husband is not going to inherit this particular estate. So the Gemara says, now, on this point, so very well said. Gemara says, and let me ask you a simple question. Rav Huna disagrees? Meaning, remember, what did Rav Huna say? Rav Huna says that it will go to the husband. What? The Gemara says, really? Meaning Rav Huna really is of the opinion that a husband is able to collect not only current holdings of his wife, but also futures as well. It's pretty much been established earlier in the perek that this is a point that is not open for a discussion or a debate. So, Am Rebbe Elazar Davar Zeh Niftach B'Gedolim V'Nistayim B'Ktanim. So, Rebbe Elazar says, the matter started with great ones and it will conclude with small ones. Meaning, Rav Huna started the discussion, I'm going to conclude the discussion. Actually, obviously he says this from a point of humility, meaning referring to Rav Huna as the great and himself as a small one. But Kol HaOmer Acharecha KaOmer Me'achshav Dami. But in terms of Rav Huna's understanding, meaning Rav Huna's not arguing with the basic halacha that a husband inherits only mochzak, not roi. That's absolute. That's an absolute value. Everyone agrees to that point. When a husband inherits his wife, he only inherits current holdings and he does not take future holdings. Agreed. Everyone agrees to that. What Rav Huna meant when Rav Huna said that the husband is able to take this particular estate is because Rav Huna understands this particular scenario as somewhat different. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's go over exactly what happened. When this guy died, he said, I want the estate to go to my grandmother, followed then by going to my daughter. Right? At that juncture, what did we think? We all thought that the entire estate rolls to the grandmother, and then when the grandmother dies, the entire estate now rolls to his daughter, and from the grandmother's perspective, the great-granddaughter. Fine. That's what we all thought. But the Gemara now is correcting our thinking, at least from Rav Huna's perspective, meaning this is the way Rav Huna views it. Rav Huna says no. You see, when you do this, meaning you're making basically, you're designating two beneficiaries. Now, in truth, how can you do that? Meaning, when you die, the estate's going to roll to one person. How do you in fact designate two beneficiaries? It's kind of a neat trick. When you think about it, it's really strange. How do you do that? So the way Rav Huna views it is that you're not really designating two beneficiaries. There's really only one beneficiary. Who's the real beneficiary over here? It's his daughter. Well, we could say that from one of two ways. One way we could say is because the daughter is more closely related to him than his own grandmother. But you don't even have to say that. Meaning, you know the daughter is the real beneficiary because she's ultimately the one that was going to end with the estate. So in other words, the end user is really going to be the real beneficiary. So what's the story with the grandmother? So what the grandmother must be, and I'm presenting the Gemara like the Rashbam, right? This is the way the Rashbam understands it, is that when he is temporarily handing it over to the grandmother, he's not handing over title to the grandmother, but just peros, just the usage, and just the fruit, and just the dividends. So in other words, the way Rav Huna understands it is that when he says first to the grandmother, then to my daughter, what he's really saying is that right now, principally, and I mean that word here literally, principally, the principle, the title of this property is really going primarily to my daughter. All I'm dictating right now is that during my grandmother's lifetime, she's going to enjoy the fruit of this property. Okay, now with that stated, now we totally understand Rav Huna. Now Rav Huna says that in the event where the sequence of deaths was first the daughter died, then the grandmother died, so Rav Huna says, okay, the husband's going to get the estate. Well, how can that be? Isn't this estate a future? So the way Rav Huna is presenting it, no, it's not. Because the truth of the matter is that really the daughter was the beneficiary of the whole time. The only thing that the guy did before he died is he just allowed grandma to use the produce of it, to enjoy the produce of it, but in terms of title, in terms of principle, it belonged to the daughter the whole time. So that's why in this particular scenario, Rav Huna says the husband is in fact going to inherit this estate. Okay.
The grandmother cannot sell it.
She has nothing to sell. It's not hers. She doesn't have title. Okay. Amar Rabba. Continuing in the Gemara in Kufcha of Hamid Beis, we are about 6 lines from the bottom. Amar Rabba, Misapatim de Bnei Marava, the Kadem Safta Vizavna Zvinizvine. So Rabba says, in terms of the Bnei Marava, we totally are on board with their position. Remember, the Bnei Marava, that's the Shachumitam that we read about 10 lines earlier on this Amud. That the halacha falls like Ravana, but not for his reason. And they argue, well, look, in other words, they obviously don't view this double beneficiary the way I just explained Rav Huna. The way they view it is the way that I originally presented it, which is that first it goes to the grandmother and then it goes to his daughter, the great-granddaughter from the grandma's perspective. So they view it as the way I was originally presented, which is that it was a first to the grandmother, and then after she dies, then it's going to go to the daughter. And to which the Gemara now is saying, the right, Bnei Marav are right, meaning the Psak of Eretz Yisrael is correct. This is Roi. This is not Muchsak. Why? Let's consider. What if grandma wants to sell it? Is the sale going to be good? So so Rabba's position is, yeah, the sale is going to be good. Meaning because, again, he doesn't view it the way Rav Huna does. He views this as both title and peros all belonging to Safta, all belonging to the grandmother. Therefore, if she wanted to sell it, she can. Therefore, from the perspective of her great-granddaughter, this is Ra'ui, meaning if she ends up dying before her great-granddaughter, great-granddaughter is going to inherit it. But that's only if that worked in that sequence. If it worked in the other way around, the great-granddaughter is not going to inherit it, or I should say better. The great-granddaughter, right. If the great-granddaughter died first, so then the great-granddaughter did not inherit it. Okay. Therefore, from the perspective of now the husband of the great-granddaughter, this is all considered Rawi. So the Gemara says, and look, litmus test is very simple. Could grandma sell the property? Yes. If the answer is yes, this is obviously not considered something which is muhsak, a holding of the great-granddaughter. Okay. Amar Rav Papa Hilchasa. after all said and done, there's a lot of balls being juggled in the air in terms of a lot of halachas that we just discussed. And the Gemara now basically is going to rattle off a number of conclusions. One, says the Gemara, in terms of a husband's ability to inherit his wife, he only inherits current holdings of his wife. Any future collectible is not going to be inherited by the husband, but rather by her children. Her Yorushim, whatever that succession of line is going to be, that's who's going to inherit all future collections. But the husband inherits his wife, but that's only on current holdings. Two, ein bechor noto bereike b'mochzak. Also, same thing is true with a bechor. A bechor, when he gets his pishnayim, when he gets his double portion, he's only going to be inheriting the double portion of current holdings. Any collection in the future is not going to be inherited is not going to go to the oldest brother from the perspective of Pishnaim. Obviously, he'll get a single portion of all future collectibles for the estate, but in terms of the Pishnaim, it's only on current holdings. And again, the Gemara here is telling us, this point of the Gemara is not something new. This was basic. The next line of the Gemara is really what we need in this regard. Right. Meaning, we know that he doesn't get Pishnaim on the collectibles. What's the definition? The Gemara says a very clear definition, siding with the opinion of the Chachamim. And that is that any account receivable, even if it's a documented loan, and so we know that the estate is going to collect on this, there's a lien against this loan, still, the Bechor is not going to be receiving Pishnaim. And although the Amoraim in yesterday's daf debated whether or not, maybe they got paid back, there's a difference whether they get paid back in money, whether they get back paid back in property. As far as Rav Papa is concerned, as far as the halach is concerned, it doesn't matter. Meaning, if the money is not held at the estate at the time of death, but rather is a future collection, it's an account receivable, even though it's documented, doesn't matter how you get paid. The halach is the Bechor does not receive a double portion of that income. Okay, and finally, so far so good. So we've concluded on the husband inheriting his wife. We concluded on the Bechor receiving the Pishnaim of only current holdings, not on things that are collectible. And now there's one more halacha that Rav Papa is going to rule on, which is a little bit strange because, quite frankly, we never discussed this particular case. So it's funny. Everything up until now was lengthy discussion, and now the Gemara concluded. Here, the Gemara is going to paskin on a case where there wasn't a discussion up until this point in time. We're on the very top of Kuch Chavav Amid Aleph Umil Vishimo Palge. What's going on over here? The Rashbam explains. Rashbam says, we're talking about the following scenario. There was an account receivable, but do you know who the borrower was? Borrower was the oldest son. Okay. Oldest son needed a little bit of cash immediately. So he turned to dad and he said, Dad, can I borrow money? And dad said, fine. And he said to dad, look, I don't want any favors. Right? This is not a gift. It's a real loan. And they documented it. Fine. Now, up until now, what do we know? So we know that the Bechor is going to be receiving Pishnaim, but only on current holdings. Not on any future income, even if that future income is documented. And is noted and notarized. It doesn't matter. In other words, it's considered a future. It's considered an account receivable, and the Bechor is not going to receive Pishnaim. But over here, let's consider. Meaning, so right now there is an outstanding loan, but right now the borrower is the oldest son. So, and the oldest son says to his father, and you know what? Well, let's write a note against this loan, and I'm going to put my property up as a security against the loan. So over here, what argument can we make? We could make an argument and say the following. Look, the reason why the Bechor does not receive Pishnayim of something which stands to be collected is because, although we're pretty sure it's going to be collected, but ultimately it's not an absolute. Meaning, it's not here right now. We still have to send it to collections. We still need to actually collect it. But over here, meaning it's the oldest son. Meaning it's he himself who is the one who is obligated to pay back. And it's he himself who mortgages his own properties. So you could make the argument over here that this is considered a current holding. You could try to make that argument. Now the Gemara says, is that a good argument? The Gemara says, I'm not sure. So here's what we're going to do, says the Gemara. So let's say, for example, that the estate is... am I going to try to do numbers over here? No. I'll just do the loan amount. Okay, that'll make it a little bit easier. Let's say the loan amount was $100, and now on that, so that is now income going back into the estate. Now again, he's the one who's providing the income going back into the estate. So he's now going to pay the estate $100. Now, if it's considered a current holding, so how much does he get of that money? So he should be getting double what all the other brothers are getting. So, for example, if there are three brothers, so he's going to get four portions. Sorry. There are going to be four portions, of which he'll get two of those portions. So, in theory now, if this particular loan is considered a current holding, so he's going to be receiving not one portion of it, but he's going to be receiving actually two portions of it. The Gemara says, again, the argument that I just made, that maybe this loan is different because he's the borrower and it's more secured. So the Gemara says, I'm not really sure, therefore we're going to go half on the argument. Meaning, I'm going to read the second Rashbam on this Amud. On the double portion that he received, on the second portion that he receives, basically, he's going to split that second portion that he's going to receive, half going to himself, half going to the other brothers. The Rashbam says, because we're not sure, and it therefore falls under the category of Mamana Muta Basafik, V'cholkin, and therefore to be divided. Now, yes, it's true, by the way, there's a larger discussion to be had over here. Mamana Muta Basafik is a machlokus between the Chachamim and Sumchus. Sumchus is of the opinion that it's to be divided. The Chachamim don't agree. Generally, we do follow the opinion of the Chachamim, not like Simchus. Although, again, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but the Rashbam does pass in like Simchus, so the Rashbam really has no problem in general saying that the halacha falls like Simchus, but the other Rishonim, most other Rishonim don't follow like Simchus, but follow like the Chachamim. So therefore, even within this explanation, it requires more analysis. Okay, I'm descending into the rabbit hole. Let's come back up. Let's go back up. I'm just going to finish the Rashbam. De'ein yadua ichashiv muchzik la'aviv sha'arei habachor rotzehu l'shabin nechasiv la'aviv l'gamrei. Again, I know I already said the point outside, but I'm reading now in the Rashbam. You see, when the son borrowed the money from the father, in this case, the oldest brother, so here, it's not just secure, it's super secure. Because what the son is saying to the father is, I am mortgaging my property for the loan, and so confident that, and not just confident, but so wanting to pay back his father, in other words, he is absolutely securing his property against his loan. So on one hand, we could say that this is not just a secure loan, it's a super secure loan, because it was from the son to the father. Well, the money was lent from the father to the son, but the mortgage is going from the son to the father, therefore it's super secure, therefore it could be considered a current holding. On the other hand, we could just simply say, look, that's all very nice, but when all said and done, it's an outstanding loan. It's an account receivable. It's no different than any other loan. It still needs to be collected. And so therefore, it doesn't fall under the category of Mukhzak, it falls under the category of Rawi. And therefore, we don't know. We don't know if we should be judging this particular loan any different than any other loan. So what do we do with this money? Yachloku. That second portion that goes to the Bechor is now going to be divided. Half goes to the Bechor, half goes to the other brothers. Okay. I'm Rav Huna, I'm Rav Asi.
Ready?
Yes.
I thought, right, you did. Is it usually, are the other cases factual questions? Because this is the question of principle.
Right. So generally speaking, Mamana Muta Basafik could be on fact, and it could be on principle. It could go either way. Right? The classic example of Babakam at the beginning of the fourth perek is just the facts. The facts are presented where we're unsure what happened.
Right?
Over here, you're right. Over here it's Mamana Muta Basafik based on principle. That's Now you're testing me. Now you're testing me, which is fine. I should be able to answer off the top of my head. I don't know, but okay.
There are cases.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay. Right. Okay. So it can go either way. Okay, let's start now with this next halacha of the Gemara. It basically goes like this. Okay, we now have a conclusion. We have now an operating principle in which to walk forward with, and that is that the bechor is only going to get pishtaim of current holdings. And in our definition of current holdings, we are going like the chachamim, which means that it's the most strictest limited definition, and that is currently what the estate has on hand at the time of death. Anything which is a future is not going to go pishtaim towards the bechor. And that includes even appreciation. Right? So in other words, so if there is going to be any appreciation in the property itself, the bechor does not get pishtaim in that. He only gets a single portion like all the other brothers get. So the Gemara now has what is going to be a very smart move on behalf of the bechor. Let's say dad dies and the bechor now realizes, okay, we're now in the position where the estate in its current estate, in its current position, is what I'm entitled to pishtaim. And from this point going forward, if there's any appreciation, I'm not going to get pishtaim. So here's what I'll do, and the Gemara totally endorses this position, which is, I will now lay a claim to my pishtaim. The Gemara uses the word micha, which literally means protest. But protest in this context doesn't mean he's like staging any type of formal protest. What he's just simply saying is, look, of this estate which we have not yet divided, I know I'm receiving a double portion in it, in its current position. I am now saying now that I am demanding my double portion. Now we don't have to divide it right now, but just know that my double portion is in this estate. From this point going forward now, if there is any appreciation, he's going to gain the pishnaim of the appreciation, since he already laid claim now to the double portion of the estate in its current state. This is the halacha of Rav Huna in the name of Rav Asi. And the Rashbam over here spells it out. Say the next Rashbam on the Amud. We said that the Bechor does not receive the double portion in appreciation. He turns to the brothers and he says, look, stop improving the estate. No more improvements right now. I want my pishnayim. The ashbiach ani shnei chalakim shali va'atol kol shivcham, and I'm ready to do all the work in order to improve my portion of the property. V'hem nisyashu malachlok v'ishbichu nechasim harimicha behem v'yitol pishnayim. Now it affords him the opportunity. Let's say again, the brothers, whatever. Nothing happened at this point going forward, but since he staged that kind of formal protest or that kind of claim, now he's able to enjoy a double portion of the appreciation as well. Okay. And the Rashbam points out, I'm going to read the next part of the Rashbam. It's important. It also kind of ties into the later part of today's daf. Daha paskina lekaman yesh lo lebechor pishnaim kodim chaluka misha shechafetz lezakos bebechor raso. You see, it also ties into another issue, and that is the following. The Bechor is going to get a double portion. At what point post-mortem does he get the double portion? Is it when immediately after death? In other words, he's automatically entitled to a double portion? Or does it come to him at the time of division? As we will see in just a couple minutes from now in the Gemara, that's subject to a debate. But if you take the side that says that he receives it automatically, so that means that the pishtaim is effectively his immediately. Now when he says to the brothers, look, stop improving, meaning because I want to collect my double portion, so let's not do any improvement right now. Let me lay claim to my double portion, and then afterwards you want to do with your portion whatever you want, that's fine. Once he says that, that locks him into his double portion. And therefore, any improvement that's done, he receives the benefit of his double portion. Okay, that's halacha of Rav Huna in the name of Rav Asi. Back to the Gemara. So I'm Rav Huna, I'm Rav Asi, Bechor Shemicha Micha. I'm a Rabbi, Mistaber Taima de Rav Asi. So the Gemara says, look, I'll agree with Rav Asi in the following scenario. Anavim u'bitrim, zesim u'maskim. Let's say that the grapes were attached to the vineyard, and then what the brothers did is that they collected the grapes. Or zesim u'maskim. Let's say the olives were still connected to the tree. And what did the brothers do? They picked the olives off the tree. So, we've undergone now a small improvement. In other words, grapes connected to the tree are not as much money as the grapes detached from the tree. So we have now had we have undergone a slight appreciation. Within this appreciation, since he lodged a formal protest before the vineyard was harvested, before the tree was harvested, so therefore he's going to receive pishnayim, not just of the original estate, but now even in its improved version, he's going to receive a double portion. Aval. However, says the Gemara, darchum lo. Let's say what the brothers did is as follows. Let's say they not only harvested the grapes, but they turned it into wine. They pressed it into wine. Not only did they harvest the olives, but they turned the olives into olive oil. So under those circumstances, the Bechor is not going to be able to claim pishnayim of the wine or the olive oil. Why not? So the Rashbam explains, and I'm going to go with the Rashbam's explanation. He himself admits that not everyone is in agreement with this, but I'm going to say it like the Rashbam, and that is because we know what the halacha is. We know there's a halacha of what's called shinui. When I make a change in an item, so I effectively have now acquired the item, even if I wasn't entitled to the item, even if I was, I'll say to its context, even if I was a thief. Once I make an irrevocable change in an item, I now acquire the item. This is a halach of shinui. Shinui is kona. Now, obviously, if I took something that did not belong to me, I have to pay for the item. I have an obligation to pay for the item. But this is a halach of shinui.
Is there any yeush that's
so when it comes to shinui, it doesn't matter. Meaning shinui creates a kinyan. That's it. So even without yeush, it still creates a kinyan. And again, you're going to have to pay, but... So what the Gemara now is saying is that if you turn the grapes into wine, or if you turn the olives into olive oil, so then a shinui has been affected, and therefore, even though presumably the price now has gone up, the wine is going to be more expensive than the grapes, the olive oil is going to be more expensive than the olives. So the Bechor does not get pishnayim in that. Because they affected a shinui. Now, Rav Yosef Amar Afilu Darchum.
Get the value of it.
Huh?
He has to get the value of it.
He's going to be receiving.
Like stole from it.
Now, remember, we're only talking about the second portion. Meaning, in terms of his original portion, he's going to be receiving commensurate to what all the other brothers are receiving. In terms of his second double portion, so what the Gemara now is arguing is that he's only going to be receiving that double portion based on the original estate, but not in its new and appreciated value. Okay. And the reason why is because the change has been made in the grapes, the change has been made in the olives. Rav Yosef, Amar na Rav Yosef, and this says, no, afilu darchum. So the Gemara says, even if it was pressed into wine, even if the olives were pressed into oil, the oldest brother is going to be receiving the appreciated double portion of the wine and the oil. So the Gemara says, really? Darchum ikara inve hashta chamra. The Gemara says, well, once you press it, you understand that it went an irrevocable change. It was grapes, now it's wine. So the Gemara says, so how can it be? So the Gemara says, Kedam Ravuk v'barcham alitain lo demei hezek anavav. Hachanami nosin lo demei hezek anavav. So the Gemara says, you're right. Meaning, generally speaking, when we say that once you make a change in the item, so then the Bechor, this Pishtaim, his second portion is not coming from the new appreciated value, but rather from the original value, that's when it went up in value. But let's imagine, it's hard to, but let's imagine that after the pressing of the grapes and after the pressing of the wine, it actually went down in value. So now the Bechor says, now wait one second. I never authorized the estate to press the wine or to press the olives. And now as a result of that, I'm going to lose money as a result of that? Meaning that can't be. So in this limited scenario, now what he's entitled to is the original value of the grapes, the original value of the olives. And this is based on the principle of whenever there was a gzela that was done, mishamim kishas gzela, you pay back based on the original price. Okay, and as the Rashbam points out, really there's no debate over here, meaning that what is said by Rav Asi and what is said by Rav Yosef are really complementary to one another. What Ravasi is saying is that if the brothers decided to press the grapes and to press the olives and the price went up in value, so again, what the oldest brother is going to receive is his first portion is commensurate to all the other brothers. His second portion only going to be based on the original value. When it comes to the price going down, unlikely as that case may be, so then the oldest brother is entitled to the second portion going back to the time where it was of a greater value. Hey, Chedma de Rav Ukva Bar Chama, the Gemara says, the statement to Rav Ukva Bar Chama, where was it originally stated? Had the Amar of Yehuda Mashmul. It was said on another scenario, Bechor Pasha Shinech Lem Aviem Anavim, Ubatsum, Zeisim Amaskom. So, in a scenario in which you had two surviving brothers inheriting the estate, one being the oldest, one the second one obviously being a regular brother. So, in other words, the estate is being divided over here as two-thirds, one-third. And the dad left them grapes. And Batsrum, they pressed them. I'm sorry, they harvest them. Zeitzim u'maskim. Bechor no to pishnayim afilu darchem. And the Bechor is going to be receiving the double portion even if they press it. And to which the Gemara says, really, even if they press it, darchem ikara ana in ve'hashtal chamra. The Gemara says it went through an irrevocable change. How can we say that he's going to be receiving the double portion of this appreciated value? Especially now that it's undergone an irrevocable change. So amar mar ugva barcham alitim lo demehezek anavav. So again, the Gemara explains this scenario as being a very strange and unusual scenario in which it actually went down in value after it was pressed, and as a result of that, he's going to be receiving the original higher value for his portion and for his second portion as well. Okay.
He
did not agree to the pressing. If he would have agreed to it, so then they would have divided evenly. We're right in the middle of Kuch Chavav and Aleph. The Gemara continues. Amar Ravasi Bechor Shenato Chelak Kapashut Viter. Okay. Now we already mentioned this point a little bit earlier, but now we're going to dive a little bit deeper into this topic of discussion, and that is his forgiveness of the second portion. Meaning, we know that when the Torah awards the Bechor the Pishtaim, the second portion, the double portion, so the Torah frames it using the word Titein Lo. You're going to give it to him. And even in English, when I say give, it's similar to the word gift. Meaning that the Torah says that halachically it's treated like a gift. Meaning that what we're going to do right now is make a very clear distinction between Yerusha and a Matana. When it comes to Yerusha, so you who stand to inherit somebody's estate, right, a relative's estate, so if you're yarshining, which I know is, you know, I'm trying to turn it into a verb, but if you're yarshining, if you're inheriting it, so you don't have the right to say, thanks but no thanks. I'll pass. Meaning, that's not the way Yerusha works. Yerusha means that it is coming to you, and you, quite frankly, don't have a say in the matter. Meaning that's, you know, normally you want it, but even if you don't want it, it's coming to you. Now, but that's not true by a matana. Meaning when it comes to a matana, so somebody's offering you a gift, so you have every right to say thank you but no thank you. And again, like we discussed yesterday, you should turn it down. Meaning, that's the Soni Matanas Yechya, that people in general should not look for a gift. They should look to be as independent as possible. So what the Gemara now is telling us is that the Bechor, as far as his second portion is concerned, so it's a Matana. And therefore, he could be Mavatar. He could just simply refuse it. So that's all a given, meaning that's the basics to walk into this discussion. Here comes now the discussion of the Gemara. So I'll start again from Ravasi. Am Ravasi b'chor shenato chelak kepashet. Viter. So let's say now we start dividing the estate. And the first land now is going to get divided amongst the brothers. And he says to the other brothers, you know what? I'll be like you guys on this particular parcel of land. Right, the first land is being divided of the estate, and he says, give me whatever everyone else is getting. I'll take just one slice of this pie. Like the same slice that everyone else is getting. So, he's mevater. Meaning, so what he's obviously done over here is he has given up on his double portion. Question asked the Gemara, my viter. The Gemara says, now, for sure he's given up, but Rav Papa mishmei de Rava amar viter ba'oso sada. Rav Papa says like this, Yes, it's true he's given up his double portion, but only on this land that's just been currently divided. But that does not mean that he waived all of his Pishnayim benefits to all other properties that are yet to be divided. And any subsequent property of the estate that's going to be divided, he still can, if he'd like to, get a double portion of all the subsequent pieces of property that are going to be divided. That is Rav Papa's position. Rav Papi Mishmei Derava Amar Vita Bechol Nechasim Kula. And Rav Papa said, I'm sorry, Rav Papi says no. That once he say basically said thank you but no thank you to the first property, that is a waiving of all of his Pishtaim rights, and therefore he's not going to receive, be able to receive any Pishtaim rights to any future properties that are being divided. Fine. So we have now, we know the machlokas. What's behind the machlokas? The Gemara explains beautifully. Rav Papa Mishmei Derava Amar Vita Barosar Sadaka Savar Ein Lo Lebechor Kodem Chalukah. Again, I know I touched on this topic earlier this morning, but here the Gemara spells it out straight out. And that is the following. The Bechor is going to get Pishnayim. When is he the recipient of the Pishnayim? Rav Papa is of the opinion that he's the recipient of the Pishnayim only at the time of Chalukah. So in other words, right now the father dies and now the estate is in this amorphous state where we know there's an estate, we know there's brothers, and we know it's going to be divided. But even at this point in time, we know what the division is going to look like, but the Bechor is not actually receiving his Pishnayim, his Pishnayim portion, until it's actually divided. Therefore, Rav Papa says, when he says thank you to no thank you to the first piece of land, that was his first time that he's actually receiving the Pishnayim. So when he says no thank you, that's not a general no thank you. That's just a no thank you to this particular land that he's receiving. On future lands, he's still going to have the option to take Pishnayim. That's Rav Papa. Skip the parentheses. What's Rav Papi's position? Rav Papi, Mishmei Derava Amar Vita Bechol Nechasim Kulam Kesavar Yesh LaBechor Konim Chaluka Umida Acha Baha Acha Bekulam. Rav Papi says, no, I fundamentally disagree. I'm of the position that the Bechor gets his Pishnayim immediately at the point of death. Meaning, again, the estate is in this amorphous state of, I know it's going to be divided amongst the brothers. I don't know how it's going to be divided. But even at that state, the oldest brother is getting Pishnayim. His Pishnayim right takes effect immediately at the time of death. Therefore, at the point where now the first property is being divided and he's saying no thank you, being that he was already awarded the Pishnayim in a generic sense, but it's already belongs to him. So when he's saying no thank you, he's saying no thank you to everything, to the entire Pishnayim benefit, and therefore he waived it all. The Gemara says, now the truth of the matter is that we just said pshat in these two Amoraim, parenthetically, by the way, they're both quoting Rava, so Rava... either you could say maybe Rava changed his mind at one point in time, whatever. Just interesting to know. Their positions, their respective positions, are actually coming out from the following scenario. Okay, the Gemara discusses the following case scenario. You had an estate that the father died, leaving two sons, a oldest and the next brother. The oldest, obviously, is entitled to a Pishnayim. Now, what the Bechor does is that he makes executive decisions, and quite frankly, he makes executive decisions with no consultation with his brother. And what he does is he sells the entire property. The entire property. Now, his heart was kind of in the right place, in that what he was going to do is he was going to take the money, and he was going to divide it. Based on the 66.33% of the... of their entitlements of share. But in other words, but he was not, the other brother did not give him the permission to sell off the property. And he, on his own, without consultation, sold the entire property of their father's estate. So, now the story goes on. I don't know what the timeline is over here. I'll say a year later, years later, whatever the case is. Now, his brother unfortunately died, but his brother was survived by children. Now, the children themselves obviously are inheriting their father. Now, remember, The Bechor sold the property but unauthorized. He had no right to do so. And what his nephews now did is his nephews went to what they believed was their father's property, and they started eating dates off their father's property. Now, the person who purchased the property, Mahanu Lekuchos, I'm sorry, Lamechot Tamari Mahanu Lekuchos, Machunu. So, along comes the buyer of the property, and, you know, turns to these kids and basically said, like, kids, get off this property. Meaning, the property belongs to me. I bought the property. I bought the property from your uncle. Get off. And he starts hitting the orphans. So, Amar Lahu Krovin. So, the relatives say now to the buyer of the property, you are the worst. You're just the worst. Lo mistaya dezav nisu l'nechsayu, ela mimchunami machisa lehu. So, look, first of all, you bought property that you were not entitled to buy. Because, again, the Bechor sold off all these properties, but he was not authorized to do so. They did not divide the estate. The Bechor, on his own accord, with no authorization from his brother, sold the properties. So first and foremost, you had no right to buy the properties because the estate was not yet divided. And then on top of that now, you're literally hitting the Yesomim so that they get off your property, a property that you legitimately did not have the right to buy. Okay, so basically, to the buyer, the Gemara says the relatives of these kids said, you're the worst. Asa l'kame derava. Amar lehu lo asa v'lo klum. So they go to Rava and they said to Rava, so the Bechor, what he did that have any type of legal validity to it? And Rava says, no. In other words, obviously, the Bechor had no right to sell the property because, again, they first have to divide the property. Then, if he wants to sell his portion, that's fine. But he had no right to sell the estate prior to the division. Okay, now, with all that stated, so now let's go and discuss what we just discussed a moment ago. Again, let's remind each other. The Bechor gets a second portion, the Pishnayim. When does that come to him? So again, what are our two options? Our two options are either it comes to him immediately post-mortem, or it comes to him at the point of division. So you see now, this is going to actually play out to make a major difference in terms of this particular case. In this case, the oldest brother on his own sold all the property. So obviously, his brother's portion he had no right to sell. That's a non-starter. His first portion that he receives, he also has no right to sell.
Because
he hasn't yet divided the property yet. And therefore, it's not his yet. But what about the second portion? His double portion. But when I say his double portion, I mean the second portion of the two that he's going to receive. So on one hand, you can make the argument that, well, it's no different than the first portion. Meaning the first portion does not yet belong to him because the land hasn't been divided. And the same thing is true regarding the second portion. Or what you could say is no. What you could say is that as far as the second portion is concerned, that comes to him effective immediately. Again, I understand it's amorphous because it hasn't yet been divided. But in terms of his rights to it and his ownership to it, it comes effectively immediately. And the Gemara says that now is open to for debate on this particular scenario. Marsavar, we're on the very top of Kuchavav Amar Aleph. Marsavar, lo asaklum, bipalga. Marsavar, bikulu. So the Gemara says exactly now open for the following debate. He's going to receive two portions. So one position is, I'll do it in the order of the Gemara. One position is that when they address the matter in front of Rav, and Rav says that what the Bechor did was no good. Even though he said no good, it doesn't mean no good, period. He meant on one of his portions that he's going to receive, that's no good. Meaning on the regular portion. But on his second portion, actually, he had the right to sell it. Because that second portion that he receives becomes effective immediately post-mortem. And therefore that he could sell. Now I know it becomes a bit of a sticking point because if the land hasn't been divided yet, so how does he know which portion actually is his through his second portion? Admittedly, I know that part's tricky, but at least in principle, he could sell it because it comes to him immediately. On the other hand, the Gemara says, the other position is, and this would be the opinion of... Right, let me make sure I get it right. I was going to say, let me make sure I get it right. Rav Papa, right? Ain l'bechor kohen chalukah. Rav Papa's position would be no, that second portion that he receives only comes to him at the time of chalukah. And since he sold the property prior to the chalukah, he had literally no rights in this property. Not in the first portion, not in the second portion as well. And so therefore, according to Rav Papa, what he did was effectively had no consequence. He had no validity to do so, because even the second portion does not come to him until the property actually gets divided. Shalch mitam, the Gemara says on this issue, once again, correspondence comes in from Eretz Yisrael, Bechor Shemachra Kodem HaChalukah Lo Asa Klum, that when the Bechor sells prior to the division, so he did nothing. Ama Ein Lo Bechor Kodem HaChalukah. So the Gemara says, so you see, at least according to the Poskim in Eretz Yisrael, so you have nothing prior to the Bechor has nothing prior to the Chalukah, meaning that his double portion that he receives is only coming to him Bishas Chalukah, only at the time of Chalukah. And even though this is the ruling that comes in from Eretz Yisrael, Hilchasa, the Gemara says conclusively, Yesh L'Bechor Kodem Chalukah, that the Bechor does in fact receive a second portion even prior to the Chalukah. Meaning that second portion is fundamentally different than the regular division of the estate. Again, the Torah frames it as a matan, it's a gift, and it's a gift effective immediately. I know, the issue of which it is, but at least in principle, it is due to him effective immediately. Marzusha midirish bapalak b'tzana de pilpalei b'hadi achin b'shava. The Gemara finishes up with one more story, and that is that Marzutra from the town of Rishba. So he had the estate, as part of the estate, there was a bucket of cucumbers. Okay, that was part of the estate. And what the oldest brother said to his other brothers is, you know what? How many are there of us? There are six brothers, six cucumbers. Okay, so everyone, let's all divide it equally. Okay, so he basically forfeited his double portion of the cucumbers. Also, the comment of Rav Ashi Amalei, hol vitrasa b'mitzvos vitrasa b'chol nechasim kulam, and he says that since he waived the double portion of the cucumbers, he therefore has waived the double portion of the entire estate. This is consistent with what we just learned together. Because again, what did we just learn together? That double portion comes to him immediately. So, at that point in time now, he is the owner of the double portion. Once he expresses that, he is waiving, he's signing off on some of it, that is an expression of, I'm signing off on all of it, since all of it belonged to him, even prior to the chalukah. Okay. Adkan. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the Mishnah.